on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Thursday, February 12, 2026 edition of InvestTalk, and what a day it was in markets. We finally had really that break lower that spread to most industries, although there were still some sectors that did fairly well today, but certainly a lot of red on the screen. And we're going to unpack this and much, much more as we go through this hour. And this hour is dedicated to you. So I encourage your calls, 888-99, try to tell you how you get through and ask your question on today's show. And this hour is dedicated to helping you become a better investor. That's what we are setting out to do each and every weekday. Okay. And in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics for the hour. But first, as usual, we'll tackle this first caller question now.
Hi, Justin and Luke. I'm looking at this stock, SFM, Sprout Farmers Market. Could you please share your analysis on this about this stock? Thank you. Bye.
All right, Sprouts Farmers Market, and this is a name that we had owned for clients for a long period of time, from I believe 2021 when it was in the high teens, low 20s, ran up to over $175 per share last year and started to roll over. We actually sold it later last year, above $100 per share. Now it's at 67. So, you know, it goes back to, you don't want to fall in love with the stock or business and lose momentum. And that's kind of what happened. And it's continued lower from there. Now, the question is it a bargain now back at 67? Yeah, it's not trading at 20 like it was back in 2021. But back then, it was only earning $2.10. Now it's supposed to earn $5.27 this year. Earn $5.27 last year. And it's supposed to earn $5.73 this year. So if you adjust it for the increase in earnings and the quality of its business, I actually think it's about as cheap as it was back in 2021. And if I go back to that time, let's zoom out here. Actually, how does my data only go back to 2023? Interesting. But yeah, 2023, late 2022, it was trading at about 8.5 times forward-looking EBITDA. And that's what it's trading at now. So I think this is a good value now. Return on equity is 38%. Back in 2021, its return on equity was closer to 25 to 30%. So it's earning more. Yeah, earnings growth has slowed. That's certainly true. It was growing in the 50, 60% range into late 2024 and early last year. But that's slowed. Fourth quarter of last year, once they report earnings, should be about 12% earnings growth. And revenue growth throughout the year is going to slow from the mid-teens, mid to high teens, all the way into high single digits. So this is the perfect example of multiple contraction. It was trading at high multiples, and you just couldn't see that sustained growth for a grocer. That's what it is. It's 440 stores in 24 states offering natural and organic foods. Now, we bought it for secular reasons, and honestly, this is starting to become a price that I'm really, really liking. So I'm giving Sprouts a thumbs up. Obviously, you could see a disappointment in earnings, so you could get another flush lower, but I think this has a floor of probably $50, is probably my best guess, and it's at 67 now. So could it go lower? Absolutely, but I'm really liking kind of the long-term value here for Sprouts. Now, we have a lot to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and we're going to talk about the Lunar New Year liquidity pump. The next week or so kicks off the Year of the Horse in China. So we'll discuss the massive holiday injection coming from China's central banks and whether it's a trap for investors. In addition, we have other topics to cover. One is in regards to insider buying. a lot of people think that, oh, the insiders buy. Well, that is a sign that they're very confident, and I should be just as confident because they're insiders. They know what is happening within the business. And we're going to talk about what it looks like typically 30, 60, 90, 100 days out after that purchase. And then we'll discuss software stocks. Software stocks have been taking on the chin. And when a certain sector is down on its luck and kind of is making headlines like this, usually that is a good time to buy. And I think that's absolutely true for a subset of these names. But it's probably also going to be a minefield where some of these names will be usurped by AI in some way, shape, or form. And their business will struggle. And it may be a melting ice cube and maybe a value trap for a number of years. There's definitely going to be those names within the software space. But how to think about the names that won't be a catalyst or be a won't be a victim of the AI shifts in that industry. Okay. So we'll dig into that topic. And lastly, if we have time, there's one other one. I can't pull it up. I don't think we'll have time for anyone. So we'll get with those as well as your voice bank calls. One is on a follow-up to our backdoor Roth IRA question and then Caterpillar, C-A-T. And if we have some questions that came in earlier via the comment section on the InvestTalk YouTube channel as well. And of course, most importantly, will be your live calls. So if you are listening, maybe in the Bay Area on AM 1220 or on our website, on our live stream, you can call right now at 888-99-CHART. And up next, a live call from Don and Arinda asking about what it means to say risk on and risk off. And then we will go over the market as well. So hang on, that's coming up next.
When you tell your friends about InvestTalk and they ask you why you listen, let them know there are many reasons, and one is parallel investing from KPP Financial and InvestTalk host Justin Klein. Parallel investing means Justin invests right alongside KPP Financial clients. He makes the same trade for KPP Financial on the same day, at the same price, and the same percentages as KPP clients. There's no front running and no special treatment. In this way, Justin and KPP Financial share the same risks and the same potential for success. Parallel investing aligns the interests of Justin and KPP Financial with those of his clients. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are ready to answer your questions about parallel investing. And you can learn more anytime at investtalk.com. In the early days, InvestTalk was Jerry Klein and Steve Peasley. Now the torch has been passed and a new generation of hosts is on the job. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. So when you've got finance and investment questions, don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
As I promised earlier, let's go to Don in Orinda asking about what it means to say risk on and risk off. Can you clarify?
Actually, a little bit, definitely so. Risk on, risk off, you hear it all the time. I'm trying to figure out how they got their definition. Risk on, to me, would be there's problems, but risk on means everything's quiet. Risk off means hair on fire. Why does that make sense? And well, also, I would appreciate a little bit about the assets and a little bit about what it means and such.
Well, when it comes to those terms, what they're typically talking about is, you know, broad-based sentiment in the markets, and risk on is a little more murky. Risk off is typically pretty straightforward, and that is correlations. So when everything is selling off at once, or at least all the riskier type of assets are selling off at once and money is flowing into safer assets, that is typically risk off, and vice versa. So right now, and today's a good example. Today was a very risk off day. You had technology down considerably. You even had energy down. You had industrial manufacturing businesses down. But what was strong? Healthcare, consumer staples, utilities. Those are non-cyclical. And so that's risk off, meaning, oh, I don't know what's going on with the economy. I don't know what's going to go on with earnings. I'm going to go into businesses and sectors that don't have a lot of correlation with whether the economy is strong or not. Okay, what we call non-cyclical names. And risk on would be the opposite. It doesn't mean that money has to necessarily flow out of those sectors, but they typically underperform and you have more cyclical sectors outperforming. And that's what had transpired for most of the back half of 2025. Now that's starting to turn a bit. And you also typically with a risk off to confirm a more durable risk off environment, you will also see credit spreads widening out, meaning that bond investors are moving out of corporate bonds and risky bonds into, say, treasuries as well. And so that also kind of corresponds with a more durable risk off environment. Does that make sense?
A little bit, okay. But I'll just change my mind to make it work.
Well, I don't want that. I want you to have clarity. You know, today was a good example where the 10-year Treasury bond ETF was up about a little over 0.5% on the day, where the, if I go take a look at like let's see what LQD did. Yeah, LQD was up about 47 basis points on the day. So on Treasuries outperformed. They both did well, but if you look at, let's look at junk bonds, JNK. So JNK was actually down 0.1% of the day. So you're talking about junkier bonds, junkier credits, money moving out of that and moving into treasuries. So it's all about moving away from more cyclical, riskier assets and into safer assets. And that typically is treasuries. That typically is non-cyclical sectors.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Thank you.
No problem. Thanks for the call. And I guess that goes directly into our market wrap up for today. A very interesting day. It didn't start off this way. We started off the day kind of a ho-hum day. Markets were modestly up earlier in the day, and you had a big, big sell-off kind of late morning, and we closed near the lows of the day. And that certainly is an important factor to consider, that we close near the lows of the day. And I said this before, said this many times, Bitcoin was the canary in the coal mine. The fact that that continued to decline was an indicator that, you know, this kind of choppy period that we've been in the markets for the last 3-4 months now was most likely going to resolve to the downside. And if you look at something like the XLK, you know, we got that bounce. It made a lower low earlier last week, bounced right into resistance and rolled back over. So the market is weak. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And you see that with the jobs numbers. You see that with just the broader economy is absolutely weakening. You had existing home sales today that dipped down month over month, 8.4%. So it was a strength turned into a big weakness, really. In December, from November to December, you had existing home sales going from about 4.1 million all the way up to 4.27 million. So nice little bump near the highest level since December of 2024. And now 3.91 million for the month of January. That's the lowest level since September of 2024. So I think that is a big tell. Consumers are not feeling optimistic about this economy. Industrial production month over month was down 1%. So this is a weak market, and it is becoming a risk-off market. That's the only way to interpret it. And what's interesting is you did have a sell-off in kind of the industrial metals, copper, gold, silver, obviously gold and silver are more precious metals, but when markets go into risk off mode, correlations go to one. You have to remember that. And so be ready for a little bit of rockiness. Doesn't mean you sell everything, but certainly in the short term, markets are headed for a bit of a slide. Now we're heading to a break, and we thank you for helping us achieve more than 62 million downloads. You can call me with your question right now at 888-99-CHART.
Your questions are free. The answers are unbiased. Justin Klein is here now, ready to take your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
We're going to go take a live call, another one. Mike from Utah, looking at United Healthcare.
Yeah, I've been kind of following this, and it's been dropping pretty dramatically. I was kind of curious on your opinion if when a good low point would be to buy into this, or if you'd just stay away from this, or it looks like over the past 2 years, it's kind of been struggling, been losing.
Yeah, I mean, are you familiar with the story of why it's kind of fallen out of bed?
Well, I think they're going through some lawsuit issues, right? Or some government fraud.
Do you remember the murder of their CEO? Do you remember that story?
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. Yep. I didn't think of that, about that being the player
I think that's a piece of the story. But this is something I've been saying about United Health for a long period of time. And I truly believe this about all the healthcare names. Basically, since the Affordable Care Act was passed, which was basically written by lobbyists within the health insurance industry, their business was booming. And I just got my bill because I pay for my employees' healthcare. And it's another 9 or 10% increase. And it's just untenable the way this healthcare system continues to go. You cannot have healthcare costs rise at 8, 9, 10, 12% per year, year after year after year after year, and keep that system going. Why? Because that is a level that is far exceeds inflation in the rest of the economy. And so eventually what happens, it's just the simple numbers. If you outgrow the growth of the economy in price and costs, eventually, you just become the economy. You start to crowd out the capital elsewhere. And so I said this as this was going up. I said, this is not going to sustain. There's going to be something that breaks within the healthcare system. And it's probably going to come from government. Now, I didn't know the CEO was going to get killed. Didn't know that. Definitely didn't know that. But I knew that this system was untenable. And you've seen them start to kind of push back and actually approve things that they used to not approve. And that has pushed their earnings from $27.66 in 2024 down to $16.35 in earnings last year. And so it's earned $17.85 this year. So it's supposed to level out around this level. But I don't feel confident in that. Why? Because they didn't fix anything. The system is not fixed. The healthcare system is not. I think everyone can agree that this healthcare system is not working for the vast majority of people. Now, how is it fixed? I'm not sure. You know, is it a true, really rethink of the private healthcare system? Is it some sort of single payer? Is it Medicare for all? I don't know how it gets resolved, but it's not going to stay in this structure. And therefore, I cannot invest in this space because I don't have any confidence that the level of earnings and the structure of this industry is going to stay intact over any reasonable length of time, meaning 3, 5, 7 years. It's going to change. We're in the midst of the fourth turning. This is one of the central tenets of the problems that I think the average American sees, is that our healthcare system just isn't functioning properly. And United Healthcare and the other healthcare names are all part of that kind of broken system. And it manifests in obviously the CEO getting killed. There's a lot of backlash, a lot of people supporting that. Not something I support, but it's something that a lot of people are supporting because of how broken that system is. And so since it's fallen out of bed, I've had a number of calls about this. And I said, I still would not buy it because there's a lot of uncertainty still ahead. So it's just uninvestable because you don't know what that profit level will be over the longer term. And it has a lot of debt on its balance sheet. And so what has the stock done since it fell? It found a bottom in May of last year, right around $260 per share to $250. It bounced all the way to the 200 moving average around 380. And now it's back to about 284 at the close now. It's just in a choppy sideways pattern, which also from a technical perspective tells you it's probably going to take that another leg lower. So I add up what my logic says about understanding the industry, understanding the zeitgeist that's out there in the collective consciousness of Americans. And I say, why am I going to put capital in something that the vast majority of Americans don't support the current system? And UnitedHealthcare is now the poster child of the current system. So to me, it's a no-go. I would not touch it. I think there's way, remember, there are opportunity costs with every dollar you put in anything. It means you could have put that money in something else. And there are a million other things in the market that I have way more confidence in the sustainability of the industry and the current profit level and the long-term growth and the public support of that particular industry. So the choppiness and relative weakness, relative strength of 21, is telling you a lot. Eventually, I think it goes lower and I would stay away from it. Now, the next Invest Talk, we'll dig into the story. Housing. The spring season starts now. And historically, the real estate buying season begins the weekend after the Super Bowl. So we'll look into early inventory data and more tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Klein, ready to take your calls on 888-99-CHART.
There are a few things that make KPP Financial special. One of them is parallel investing. This means they invest right alongside their clients. Here's how it works. When KPP Financial makes a trade for their clients, Justin Klein makes the same trade for himself and KPP on the same day, at the same price, and same percentage. No front running, no special treatment. Learn more about parallel investing at investtalk.com.
Now, our main focus point on today's show is about the Lunar New Year liquidity pump. And the new year in China kicked off on Sunday, and the festivities, at least, for the Lunar New Year. And there's an interesting phenomenon in China, or not phenomenon, but I guess tradition. And it's where workers in the big cities, they go home for this New Year celebration, and they typically will give their family money. We call it the red envelope. And it's usually filled with cash, and you know, they're spending money to travel back to their childhood home for these celebrations. And what that does is it reduces liquidity within the system, and it creates a liquidity gap. And so what does the People's Bank of China do? Well, they anticipate that, and they inject liquidity. And they've done that recently, about $87 billion to ward off this cash crunch. They have a fractional reserve banking system just like we do. And the industrial securities projects an additional $504 billion of added liquidity for the Lunar New Year. And that typically gives some short-term boost to Chinese assets. But it's also usually a short-term fix. Overall, the estimate is that the Lunar New Year will drain about $130 billion from the system. And then on top of that, you're having Chinese local authorities, think local governments, selling about $137 billion of bonds in the first 2 weeks of this month. That's 18% more than what was issued in January. So what is the People's Bank of China going to do? It's not only injecting that liquidity, but it's also looking to cut reserve requirements and interest rates. And remember, cutting reserve requirements is much more powerful than cutting interest rates because, once again, in fact, fractional reserve banking system, if you only have to keep 9.5% reserves versus 10% reserves, that can be a lot of money and a lot of leverage that you can take out to lend into the economy. And so this is a big deal. And a lot of people focus on the Fed, but frankly, it's actually China that is becoming more and more relevant to global liquidity dynamics. Remember, money is fungible. What does that mean? It means that if money is created somewhere, whether it's in the United States, whether that's in China, whether that's in any country around the world, if that new money can be exchanged for another currency to buy some other good and service, that is positive for net liquidity within the system. Just because yuan is created in China doesn't mean it can't have an impact on dollar-denominated assets here. And the two biggest economies in the world are the United States and China. So it should not shock you that the two most impactful central banks are Federal Reserve and the People's Bank of China. So this is what I talk about when you're looking at global liquidity dynamics. It's not just about the Fed. There are other important actors as well. The world does not revolve around us. We are in a globalized financial system. And idiosyncrasies like this, like the Lunar New Year in China, can have an impact on our markets. So are the red envelopes the reason for the red market today? Potentially. Certainly is a factor. So I really wanted to highlight that because it's important to step out, look at the world, and realize that it's not all about the U.S. And a lot of times what happens in the market is out of our control. Let's keep things moving and drop in another listener question now.
Hey, this is Steve calling from Santa Monica. I had a follow-up question to Justin's answer about IRA rollovers. You're saying you need to not have any money in a traditional IRA because then you'll invoke the pro rata rule when you're trying to roll something into a Roth, when you're trying to do a backdoor. But you've also said pretty consistently that when you leave a job, you should roll your 401k into a traditional IRA. So does that mean if you have done that in the past, which I have, left various jobs and 401ks and rolled them into a single IRA, then I can't really do a backdoor Roth, or I can't do a backdoor Roth without getting a tax penalty because I've already got money in a traditional IRA? Or does that mean I just have to open a separate IRA for the purposes of the backdoor Roth? I've been confused about this for a while. Thanks. Bye.
So you are making a good point here that if you do roll over that 401k into an IRA, it kind of does prevent you from doing a backdoor Roth. And that is one argument for not rolling that over, is because you would have to convert all of that IRA money to a Roth and it might not be advantageous to do that at the current time. So you definitely have to weigh that a bit. But for most people, as I said before, the actually best time to get money into a Roth is not necessarily while they're working. So even doing a backdoor Roth while you're working may not be the best plan. For most people, it's to actually just continue to contribute to an IRA or to a traditional 401k, take the tax write-off. Then you do the Roth conversion after retirement. Now, some people, they have so much money that even in retirement, they're going to be in a high tax bracket, so it won't matter. But that's very rare. Very, very rare. So what I was talking about is, yes, you can do a backdoor Roth. But just because you can do a backdoor Roth doesn't mean that you should do a backdoor Roth. Everyone's situation is different. This is where we have software that will project this out. When do you plan to retire? What's Social Security going to be like? Etc. So, and I emphasize this. I'm going to emphasize this to you, to clients, to everyone. Everybody's situation is very different. When it comes to Roth versus traditional, you have to have a plan. You have to project things out into retirement and beyond. Otherwise, you're not really making a decision with context, with an understanding of the right time. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you absolutely should. It should fit in the broader plan. This is why I would say, once you get into life that's a bit more complicated, you own a house, you have sizable investments in different taxable and non-taxable accounts, Roth accounts, traditional accounts, etc. You're trying to figure out when you should retire, how much you need, all of that. There's a lot of calculations that go into this. There's a lot of variables like tax rates. So this is where I would say you need a real advisor. That's why I don't think robo-advisors are good enough. They're not really giving you a true understanding of your plan. Is a Roth good or not? I can't tell you that in a vacuum just looking at you today. I have to look at 10, 15, 20 years, and especially into retirement through especially taking Social Security and then RMD age. Because I need to know what, based on the projected value of those accounts, your RMD will be and what tax rate that will push you in based on your Social Security income as well, and maybe pension income, and maybe other income, like maybe you own some rental properties. See how complex this can get? So yes, there are some instances where you may not want to roll that into an IRA, but for the vast majority of people, you still do, because you open up yourself to much better investments, and that's worth it. You get out of the fees that are within the 401k, and then you do those Roth conversions later, usually after retirement. Hope that helped. Now, as you know, we receive listener questions from the comment section over on the Invest Talk YouTube channel as well. And Jan says, big names, CAAPX is exploding, mostly benefiting smaller IA-related essentials. S&P is running 23 times forward PE, historically expensive. I like the ones with reasonable PEG ratios, PEG, PEG ratios. These are some of you call it GP ratios, growth to PE, PE to growth, however you want to do it. It's one's just the inverse of the other. And what you're talking about is growth at a reasonable price. And I think it's a reasonable start, but I always caution against simplifying stock analysis to things like PE ratios, growth to PE ratios, etc. Why? Because, as I said many times before, if a company has a lot of debt on its balance sheet and it's a shrinking ice cube, meaning it's a value trap, well, could have a low PE, and that's expensive with a low PE. Could be trading at 9x earnings, and guess what? Those earnings are melting. Now, let's say those earnings are growing, but they're not growing that much, and most of the cash flow is going towards paying down debt because it's a highly levered balance sheet, and you're not going to see dividends or buybacks anytime soon because the business is just too levered. That can happen as well, and that can make the PEG ratio, PE ratio, whatever you want to call it, look attractive on the surface, but you're really not understanding the quality of the business and quality of the balance sheet. So as I always say, quality matters. You have to understand the business. If you don't understand the business, do not invest in it. And if you can't tell if it's a quality business, do not invest in it. Now let's pivot back to another voice bank question now.
Hey, InvestTalk, just had a question about Caterpillar. I heard Justin a little while ago said, pick it up if it goes down to like $500, and it's just kind of kept going up. So I was just curious if it's kind of overbought and due for a little correction at some point soon, or if I should just pick it up now. I will listen for your answer on the show. Thanks.
All right. This is Caterpillar, and it has been doing very well, and they manufacture construction and mining equipment, and not a shock. This is right in the heart of AI construction, as well as mining equipment for new mines of copper, gold, minerals of all kinds. And so earnings this year are supposed to be up 20% and then up 21% next year. Yeah, it's overbought. Today it was down pretty nicely as the market kind of rolled over. And I think you are going to get some sort of, as the caller earlier in the show said, a risk-off environment. I said that to start this year, this is going to be a choppier year. You're going to have risk-off periods. You're going to have risk-on periods. I think we're in the beginning of a risk-off period. And guess what? Even the best winners this year, names in the industrial space or the energy space or the mining space, they will not be immune. For a lot of people within these sectors, they're going to get queasy because they're not going to understand the level of volatility that these things can have. A 20 to 30% drop can happen very quickly within a matter of weeks, and it can scare the novice investor. And so with all of these names related to AI spending or to commodities or commodity miners, commodity producers, do not be shocked to see those drops. And Caterpillar today, let's see, how much was it down? 2%, which in the grand scheme of things, not too bad with what the market did. But it's at 758 now. Would it shock me to see 500, where it's just right around the 200-day moving average sometime this year? Not at all. It's overbought. It's expensive. It's also expensive based on its growth. Even though growth is accelerating, its historical growth rate is pretty meager. So I like it as a company. I definitely wouldn't buy it above $500 per share. This is InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday is to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in right now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin and Luke, this is Rob calling from Las Vegas. I have a technical analysis question, specifically in terms of reading support. I've got two positions in my portfolio, Powell Industries and McKesson. You know, back in the early part of this month, Powell was trading at about 453. The following day, it went up to 527. I think it's up to 581 right now. Right around there. McKesson on beginning part of the month on February 4th, it was at 822 and then it shot up to 957. So I wanted to add more positions in my portfolio, but they shot up. So my question is pertaining to not only these two stocks, but how do you look at a chart and read support and then also at the same time decide on when to enter a position? So I wanted to maybe get some guidance on that, if you don't mind. I'll listen to the answer on the next podcast. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Well, this is a great question, and I'll give you three simple support levels, or at least how to find support levels. Number one are if you need software, I think there's some online software, but it's being able to draw Fibonacci lines. This is natural ebb and flow and patterns within the world as well as markets. So understand Fibonacci, go study Fibonacci. Have to do that. Number two. Very simply, moving averages. Simple moving averages, 50, 100, 220 day, all of that. Those are the ones that are on my chart. 200 day, 100, 50, 20. When it gets back to, my favorite is the 100 day moving average. That's the one that, if it's in an uptrend, it typically will hold that 100 day moving average. And if it hasn't touched that 100 day in a while, that's usually good support. Now, the most clear cut, best way, or best support level, to me, is always the previous breakout area. So I'll just use Powell as an example. It peaked out around $410 per share in October, pulled back to about 280, 275 in early December. And now it shot up, broke out above that 410, 405 level. When it gets back to around that 410, which just happens to be the Fibonacci, the 618 Fibonacci level, that will be good support. And there are now two levels of support. That's the best thing, is finding two levels, a moving average as well as a breakout area, maybe a Fibonacci number, etc. Those are the ways. Now, it'd be good to show you. I could show you. It probably translates better. But those are the three. If you could understand those three things about reading a chart, you will be light years ahead of everybody. A lot of people get into, you know, things like MACD, which I think matter, but those things matter less. Those indicators that you might pull in a chart are going to matter far less than all three of those simple chart reading tools. Now, lastly, let's go into what was interesting about this market and what tells you about forward returns in the near term. This is a really interesting data point. And over the past month, this is through yesterday's close, the S&P was roughly flat. But the average S&P 500 stock saw an absolute move of 10.8% over that same window. Think about that. The market has gone nowhere, but a lot of stocks have gone somewhere, either up or down. Software is down about 25% for the year. Energy is up 22% on the year. This is through yesterday. Net-net, market's gone nowhere over the past month. NASDAQ is down. Especially after today, NASDAQ's down probably 3% on the year. S&P is now down a little over, about a half percent on the year. But if you look, two month to 1 year, S&P returns from events like this are usually negative. There's large dispersions in markets. That means markets are moving, but there's a handful of names keeping things together. Underneath the surface, there's a lot of deterioration. And so that's why I say we are entering a risk-off environment. I'm Justin Klein, remind you about KPP Financial's parallel investing. When we make a trade for our clients, we make a trade for my accounts as well. Same day, same price, same percentage, no front running, no special treatments. So we invest right alongside our clients and we share the same risk and potential for success. You can learn more at investtalk.com. Please remember you can tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes and Spotify, and check out our YouTube videos as well. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes. We always love those as well. Independent thinking, shared success. It's InvestTalk.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.